we keep educating people, especially youth, because the youth are going to make the difference in the future. One, the harmful effects of the litter to the environment, not only animals and species, but to us as humans. I'm sure most people hear the statistics about how much plastic is in our bodies now, microplastics from the overuse. It's educating people. It doesn't have to always be this way. There can be a better way.
Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton, founder and CEO of Jailbreak Leadership. At Jailbreak Leadership, we unlock the power of AI by creating your AI strategy, streamline the technical and logistical implementation, and most importantly, guide the AI adoption of your team. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Given all the bad news we hear, how about a little good news for a change? Did you know litter, yes, that trash you see everywhere, is down 34% across America since 2020? I'm excited to say one of the people leading the charge to help make San Diego a cleaner city is with us here today in the studio. Steve Morris, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thank you. Thrilled to be here.
Steve is the executive director of I Love a Clean San Diego. I Love San Diego is a countywide movement that inspires every San Diegan who cares about their community to take environmental action. The goal? Protect San Diego's natural beauty for generations to come. Love that. A community action here to do something good in our community. So Steve, give us a little insight. What are you guys doing there? What's I Love San Diego all about?
Well, it's a 70-plus year organization. So I've been there about 4.5 years, and I consider myself to be a steward of this long-standing, embedded-in-community organization, nonprofit, that was founded in 1954 when...
It's older than me.
Yeah. If you,
that's saying something these days.
If you think about it, back then, and it's hard for us in today's world to imagine, but like back then, people just kind of tossed stuff out their car window. There wasn't a lot of single-use items in society, right? Things were reused. Everybody had jars and glass and silverware. I don't think there was any fast food. You couldn't just stop somewhere and get a bottle of water and
drink
it.
There was no drive-up restaurants. Yeah.
So there wasn't as much kind of single-use litter floating around, but also there wasn't a lot of places to dispose of it. So litter became a problem because when they did have it, they just kind of tossed it out the window. Litter on the highways was the big thing. I Love a Clean San Diego was really founded to prevent litter. In fact, the original name of the organization was the War Against Litter Campaign, which was promoted by the city of San Diego.
Did we win the war,
Steve? To combat, yeah. And at the time, you think about it, we're coming out of World War II. So war was a popular thing to motivate people. I don't know if it would work so well today, but that's how they viewed it. This is a battle we need to fight against it. And I'd love to say that in 70 plus years, we've combated the problem, but it's actually gotten worse because the issue has gotten more challenging.
Yeah. There is trash everywhere. Plastic, plastic, plastic.
Yeah. Everything we buy, almost everything we buy, has something you discard immediately. People don't believe me when we talk about this being an issue, or they just kind of say, oh, the city cleans up the trash and all that. I say, well, try to go a whole day without throwing something away.
Oh, I'm amazed. It's just me, my wife, and the puppy. I mean, in our house, the amount of trash we produce on a weekly basis, it's just like mind-boggling.
You go to the grocery store, and you get home, and you start unpacking, and you're like realizing, like, oh, half of what you bought, you're going to throw away. The containers, the packaging, all this kind of stuff. So it's an epidemic. I don't mean to be doom and gloom. I say this with a boat of confidence that, yes, there's still an issue, but the fact that people care about the issue is more important than anything else. And people do care. They just, a lot of times, don't know how to do the right thing or how to like not get sucked into the world that we live in, which is buy, 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 single use, move on. If it breaks, throw it away, get something new, because that's the cheapest, easiest way to do it.
So I have to share with you, I have some level of expertise in this. Hands-on expertise. So in PB, my wife runs a nonprofit, and within the nonprofit, we have a social enterprise. So we hire typically about 6 people that are unhoused to work for us, and they get about 20 hours of work a week, and then they get a case manager. We now have housing for them as well, which is pretty cool. So the whole idea is like a 9-month program to help these people that want to get off the street, willing to do some work and do what they need to do to give them an opportunity to make that happen. So for about 1.5 years, I ran the morning street crew, which meant I was in charge of the business district of PB, where we got like 30 trash cans. So our job was to empty the trash cans and then pick up the trash along Garnett and some of the other side streets. So I did that for 1.5 years. People are disgusting. That's what I'm going to say.
Well, and so when most people think of I Love a Clean San Diego, I think they think about a cleanup, probably a beach cleanup, because those are more high profile people.
Yeah, you hear about that a lot.
But really, behind the curtain, most of our cleanups that we organize are happening inland because about 80% of the marine debris that ends up in the ocean starts way inland. It doesn't start from the Saturday beachgoers or the tourists. The majority of it comes from parks that, you know, the wind blows, it goes into the storm drain or down a stream. All that in San Diego flows to the ocean.
I always call it, we're flushing the toilet every time it rains.
Exactly, right? All this untreated stuff just gets trapped in there. So I think kind of the hidden secret is that what we do anywhere in the county matters because it's probably going to end up somewhere that you don't want it to when litter occurs.
So I was never a litter guy. I don't know, maybe the way it's brought up or something. I try hard not to litter, but things happen. Things fly out the window, whatever, things occur. But like I say, I'm always kind of amazed by where someone obviously just opened the door and put the whole bag of McDonald's on the street. It's like, who taught you that? Where did that come from?
I know.
You know, my number one thing, Steve, is the flossing, the little plastic flossing things. Like, I don't want to see that.
No. And when we do a cleanup, it's always like you look around and you go, what happened here? Like, what was the story of why this piece of litter ended up on the ground? But it's interesting because we have three departments at I Love a Clean San Diego. One of them is called community engagement. That's where most of the cleanup events occur. And I always describe that is the gateway into our organization because it's easy to get someone to volunteer a few hours, you know, on a Saturday for a cleanup, especially in their own community or their own backyard. But once they experience the cleanup and they see what is left or discarded or out there and they start thinking about how did this get there? What caused the person to do it? What am I doing in my own life in terms of my purchasing habits or whatever? Like that could have led to this, right? And they start thinking about it more. So it's the gateway because you kind of don't notice it unless you're looking for it. The trash today is so small. I mean, we still have some spots where there's illegal dumping where you'll find a sofa or a mattress or a refrigerator, right? But that's here and there. That's few and far between. It's the little tiny pieces. And the quote you made at the beginning of this about the 34 million pieces of litter, billion pieces of litter in America. Most of them are smaller than a quarter. Small pieces of plastic, small pieces of discarded items that break down. So when you start going to a cleanup and actually looking for it, you realize, oh my gosh, there's a lot, like you were saying, there's a lot of this stuff that I don't see because it's so tiny. Once you see it, you can't unsee it and you start thinking about it more and more.
And I think trash kind of draws trash. Like when people see trash, somehow they feel like it's okay to throw trash here. It's kind of like graffiti. The minute someone writes some graffiti on something, next thing you know, there's all kinds of graffiti on it. So I think there's sort of that mental thing too that, oh, I guess it's okay to throw trash on the ground here. So yeah.
Yeah, there's a theory. It's called the broken window theory. Like if you're in a neighborhood where there's some dilapidated buildings that have broken windows, it's easier to,
right.
Graffiti, trash, because it just kind of fits in with that.
It's our culture here.
Yeah, and that's why it's interesting because we're affiliated with a national organization called Keep America Beautiful, and that's where that statistic came from. They did a national litter study this year. They did it every 5 years. And you know, they've really leaned into, I mean, obviously they're doing similar work to us, but they've really leaned into the beauty, you know, Keep America Beautiful, because I think that's what really unites the community is they don't want to see trash. They don't want to see graffiti. They don't want to see discarded materials, blight, right? So how do we make things beautiful? And that's a combination of when we do like, we call it a transformational event. It's removing litter. It's removing graffiti. It's maybe planting. Removing invasives, planting trees, planting native species. Maybe it's painting a mural, something that's a positive message. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we are about. It's not just, again, people associate us with litter cleanup or beach cleanup, but that's just the start. I mean, there's so much more to appreciating the environment and the community we live in. And I've never met a San Diegan who would prefer to see trash or blight or things like that. I mean, you don't pay the prices we pay to live here to see that kind of stuff.
Right? Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Kind of funny, a little side story here. We had these trash cans, and over the years, the lids all disappeared. So one of the big problems is the birds. Yes. So recently, Discover PB actually got lids, and I'm out walking the street now going, oh, it made a big difference putting trash cans in these things because now the birds are in there picking all the trash out and dragging it all over the place. So,
right.
So you mentioned there's three major efforts you got going. What are the other two?
Yeah, and I'll frame it like this too. So it's kind of like we're working in the past, present, and future. So the cleanups, which is our community engagement department, that's kind of cleaning up the past. The litter was discarded. Mm-hmm. It's out there. We can't prevent it from getting into the environment. It's already there, but we're going to try to remove it, clean up the past. The present is our waste recovery department. And the present is like, how do you keep your trash from actually becoming landfill, going into your trash can? Ultimately, that's like the last, I don't know what to do with this item. I can't repair it. I can't reuse it. I can't recycle it. So it's going in the trash and eventually buried in the ground. So our waste recovery department does a couple of things. One is they run this great resource for the entire county. So if you're listening to this, you can access this right now. It's a database and a hotline. So it's called WasteFreeSD, wastefreesd.org.
We'll put a link in the podcast.
It's funded by the County of San Diego because they want this resource available to everybody. But we run it. We run this database. You go on this website, you type in paint cans, you type in your zip code, and it gives you resources on where you can take those items. It's a hazardous waste facility. Maybe they are recyclable. Sometimes they're just trash. But you can type in, you know, light bulbs, batteries. We're constantly updating this database because everybody spring cleaning once or twice a year. They got a bunch of, or, you know, I hate to say it, but maybe they're cleaning out the home of a loved one that they've lost. And what's great is not only do we have this database, but we actually have a live hotline Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. that you can call someone on our team and ask these questions to. So our team sometimes becomes like these life counselors to folks who are cleaning out somebody, a lost loved one's home, or they have these items they've been holding on to a long time. They have some meaning, but they want to discard them, you know, in an environmentally safe way. So this WasteFreeSD hotline or database is a free resource for the whole county. We've been doing it for, I think, close to two decades. I mean, we used to get calls about... This is going to date people if you know what I'm talking about, but phone book recycling.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody used to get a new phone book delivered.
I used to hate that. You know, no one's using them. Even when we stopped giant using books. Phone books, they kept delivering these phone books to my house going, what are they doing this for?
And once a year they get updated. What do you do with the old one? And this is back when we didn't have curbside recycling. It wasn't that long ago. It was kind of the 90s when that started. It wasn't that long ago where we didn't have curbside. And there's still states in the union that don't have it. So we're kind of fortunate here in California, but. And so we used to field calls about everything from phone books to Christmas trees back in the day, and now it's obviously a lot more technical. But that resource and kind of our waste recovery department is really about how to prevent your what you think is waste today from actually becoming in the waste stream or getting, you know, buried in the landfill.
Divert it in the right direction.
Exactly. We do repair workshops for people. You'd be surprised how easy it is to repair some things that you might just think, oh, I'm just going to go buy a new one. We do clothing swaps.
Give me an example. What kinds of things?
Bike repair. Digital stuff. I mean, digital stuff people throw away all the time, right? Right. Oh, this broke or, you know, whatever.
Battery wore out, so I guess I need to toss it.
Yeah, and we actually hire or have volunteers, like experts who know how to, like, repair some of this stuff. We actually did a wetsuit repair workshop in Encinitas a couple weeks ago. And if you couldn't repair it, we showed people how to reuse the neoprene to make cool products as well. So instead of just chucking it in the trash, it ends up in the landfill. Actually, like, if you can repair it, great. But if you can't, take the material and make a can koozie or a bag. We made bags. I mean, because the neoprene is really solid material, right? It can hold weight. It can be bumped around and stuff. So those are happening all the time. And then we also facilitate compost and mulch giveaway. So if you've been in San Diego for a while, the last couple of years, you've noticed we're taking our organics recycling, our green waste, your food waste, and combining it with your yard waste. And where is all that going? Well, at the landfills now, they're composting that. And then they have all this compost. And you as a resident can access that for free. Maybe you don't want to drive all the way to the landfill or the dump.
Is that Miramar? Is that where
you gotta go? Miramar is the main one, but there's several in San Diego, depending on where you live. So instead of asking residents, which you can do, you can drive to Miramar and pick it up. We actually will have a flatbed truck delivered of that compost and mulch, which is being generated by the residents, right? And deliver it to like a park. And then we help people drive by, shovel it into your, you got to bring your own bucket or bag or something, and we'll help distribute it to you. And if you're a resident, you can come as many times as you want. So you're doing a Saturday yard project and you need a bunch of mulch. And we're doing one of these giveaways. We try to do at least one a month. Pay attention to our website. You can find one near you. You can go five times, pick up mulch, pick up compost, go home, do your whole garden. You don't have to spend any money. You're reusing material that your neighbors and residents have provided for you, right? And it's totally free. So that's part of kind of the circular economy, reusing, repurposing, recycling things before they end up in the waste stream.
Love that. So how do you guys engage with business?
Yeah, businesses, we engage in a lot of ways.
Because that's our audience here, talking to business leaders.
No, absolutely. What's great about San Diego is maybe we're not as large of a corporate hub as like LA, San Francisco, New York, but there's still a lot of great businesses here. Ones that people have no idea that were founded here, you know, things like WD-40 and of course the whole biotech area. But what's interesting is coming out of COVID, it went from, you know, engaging with businesses because they wanted to do the right thing and they wanted to like look at their own waste streams and maybe they contact us for some consulting on how to do a better job of diverting waste. They actually wanted to engage their employees coming out of COVID because they weren't doing things together. Probably the number one way we activate is we'll set up either a private cleanup event or some kind of a lunch and learn at their office, get the employees together. It's employee engagement for the company. They're going to learn something. It's probably going to matter to those employees because they love San Diego. They love the community they live in. They want to keep it clean. So we work with almost every business in town, you know, from the Qualcomms to the Bumblebee Tunas to Sempra and SDG&E. I mean, they've all come to us, and it's been great because some environmental organizations might say, oh, well, we have to have rules about what companies we partner with and what we don't for reasons, you know, maybe. And I've always said, look, we're not in the business of deciding what's right and what's wrong or judging. We're in the business of the local community. And guess what? People who work at those companies live here and they're part of the community. And if they want to get out and volunteer and do some good work, by God, we're going to get out and give them that opportunity to do it. So we probably work with anywhere from 30 to 40 companies a year doing a lot of engagement that usually results in some kind of a cleanup effort or activation that is positive for the environment.
How big of a crew you got doing all this? What's your team look like?
I mean, we've got about 30 staff.
Sizable.
Yeah, 2/3 would be kind of full-time positions. We have a few part-time positions. We host some interns as well from local universities. And it's great because our team is really nimble. They know the landscape. They know how to get events done. We have a warehouse in our office where all of our equipment's stored. We actually have a fleet of 3 vehicles. We have a van, a Prius, and a truck. So we're all over town. But we make these events happen. I think we've some of the largest cleanup events we've hosted have anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 people across the county on one day, like an Earth Month or in September when we host Coastal Cleanup Day. So if you're a large company and you're thinking, hey, I want a volunteer effort, but I don't know a nonprofit that can handle 300 people, we do an annual event with Cox Communications. They have about 400 volunteers that come out to it. You know, all the drivers, all the truck, the tech folks, and as well as the office folks come out, and it's great. And they have a good time. They hire food trucks to come and feed the employees while we're running the cleanup event. The great thing is at the end of the event, we don't just pick up trash and say, thanks so much. We actually separate trash, recycling, hazardous waste as they're bringing it back to the starting point. And then we weigh everything. So they know the impact.
Have a measurable outcome.
Exactly. They feel like, oh my gosh, you know, we cleaned up and we'll separate it. You cleaned up, you know, 300 pounds of trash, 400 pounds of recyclables, and maybe 500 pounds because the green waste tends to be heavier of invasive species. So we're always giving those metrics out at the end of the day, which the companies, they want to know what their impact was that day. And so we love to share that.
For some folks, they want to record that because it's part of their social give back. If you're a B Corp or something like that,
exactly.
I mean, this is kind of a key measurement for you.
Yep.
That is awesome. The other thing I'll throw out is like back to, there's the measurable pile, but you know, when we get done cleaning an area, it looks good. I mean, I have to say, you know, we clean the streets of Garnett or whatever, and you kind of go at the end of the day or, you know, it's a Saturday and you're going, guess what, folks? It looks nice here because we were out here this morning cleaning this mess up. So, yeah,
it's
instant gratification.
It's satisfying. There's a lot of things that people do that are good that you don't always see the result of. And that's actually our third department, which is education. I kind of think of that as the future, right? So we've got past, present, future. Past, we're cleaning up the debris that's already out there. Present, we're trying to avoid it from getting out there. We're trying to teach people how to reuse and repurpose. And the future is educating people about what they can do in their life today to prevent all that from happening, to even, you know, being on the spectrum of waste and things like that. So when we meet with companies, we also try to do education as well. If we can give them some tips on their break room, how they could make that more sustainable, you know, their coffee machines. That's probably with the invention of the Keurig, you know, that's like the single use plastic version for coffee drinkers. So we always try to provide an educational component in everything we do because we want people to feel like there is a path forward, right? It's not just people look at the cleanups and they say, well, you cleaned it up today, but is it just going to be dirty tomorrow? Well, if we keep educating people, especially youth, because the youth are going to make the difference in the future, right? About, you know, one, the harmful effects of the litter to the environment, not only animals and species, but to us as humans. I mean, I'm sure most people hear the statistics about how much plastic is in our bodies now, microplastics from the overuse. So it's educating people about, you know, it doesn't have to always be this way. There can be a better way through this. And again, we're not going to eliminate litter, I think, in our lifetime. And as a society, I don't even know if that's a reasonable goal. But if we can reduce it and teach people how to behave a little bit on their consumption, a little bit more responsibly or sustainably, that's the buzzword, you're going to find that people generally want to make the right decision. And if they have the right information, it's so much easier for them to do the right
thing. Yeah, if I know what to do. And I actually have the ability to execute on it. People, I think, in general, will want to do the right thing. So,
yeah, that's what I see every day. I mean, people get frustrated and they come to us, they call the hotline and they say, I don't know what to do. The city tells me this, or the waste hauler tells me this. And so a lot of our work is just trying to disseminate information. So that's what the database does. It helps people understand what goes where, what is recyclable, what isn't. And then you might buy things differently based on those results. Now, we're not necessarily trying to force people to make those kind of changes. We think it will happen naturally because what we've seen is, like you said, people want to do the right thing. They want to live in a beautiful, clean place. So if they can do something a little different, sure, they're going to do it.
Yeah, I love that. So how the heck did you get into this? What's the big why behind this, Steve? What's your why and what's been the story?
Gosh, you know what's funny is there must have been a point in my life that we could track it back to, but I've always been bothered by waste, like anything wasteful. And I don't know if that's because my parents came from parents who grew up during the Depression, World War II, rationing. And then my parents kind of operated the same way. Like I remember in my dad's, in the garage, in his tool area, you know, there's an old mason jar full of nails, of misused nails. And he would use those for different projects. And so I think for me, it's like, I just ingrained in me at some point through my childhood. It was just like, let's not waste. Let's reuse stuff. Let's repurpose stuff. You know, one, it saves you money. You're not going to buying new stuff. And I think it's kind of cool. Maybe I'm not a very artistic person, but there's something really beautiful about a reused item and repurposing. And there's actually some artists who do that. They'll take waste. They'll take trash and they'll turn it into some really cool art. So somewhere along the line, it just was ingrained in me that like, let's try to keep what we have and reuse it till it can't be, you know, granted, if you look in my wardrobe, you might say, okay, Steve, some of these clothing items, you're going down to the threads here, but that's just, it's part of my nature. And I can't really say.
I'm like that, but I'm just cheap. It's fine. Yeah. The wife goes, are you going to wear that?
And then I think, you know, now that I'm kind of bridging it all together, I think at some point, because I've always loved the outdoors, obviously growing up in San Diego, you're outdoors almost all year round, and then translating that to youth. So I taught a lot of outdoor education, and I was kind of an ADD kid.
You were part of the Y at one point, right?
Yeah, I was at the Y. Like our kind of educational system where you got to sit and listen and learn. I didn't necessarily struggle where I couldn't do it, but like I thrived in the outdoors, tactile, hands-on education, experiential education. And that kind of goes hand in hand with kind of environmental stewardship conservation, because if you're going to be appreciating and enjoying the outdoors, you're going to want to protect it. Like I've always said, affinity leads to appreciation, which leads to action. And I didn't quote that. That's not my lingo, but it came from somewhere along the line in my career. And so seeing how much of an effect that had on kids, like when you teach kids to appreciate the outdoors or give them exposure to it, they appreciate it. Now they want to protect it. And then they become staunch advocates. So somewhere along the line, I developed that affinity for the outdoors. And that has just led to wanting to teach people about how they can protect it and how they can clean it up and how it can be beautiful for all.
Yeah, one of the things I think we learned in COVID, our contribution, when everybody kind of stopped for a moment, how the earth immediately started to come back.
Oh my gosh.
It's such an opportunity.
The healing. Yeah. The
yeah.
Healing
power. Yeah. There is opportunity. So when I was a kid, so now we're going to go way, way back. I was born in Ohio, and my grandparents had a place in Port Clinton on Lake Erie. My grandpa had a fishing boat. And I remember as kids, I was like under 10, and we'd go there, and depending on how many dead fish had washed up on the beach, it's like, okay, you can go in the water today or not, but don't put your head in the water. It's like, essentially, the lakes were dead, and they said they'll never come back. Well, they did, and we clamped down and figured out what to do, and it can come back.
I think that jogs the kind of difference maybe between us and some other kind of environmental efforts. Is like we don't take the kind of doom and gloom approach. Again, I mean, there's a place for that. I mean, we got to understand the effects of what's happening. One of the things that really distinguishes us from other environmental nonprofits is we don't really get involved in political advocacy. That's not
try to stay away from that.
It's not our lane. There's great organizations doing that, pushing legislation through, and I think there's a role for that in this fight against, you know, kind of litter. But what we've found, especially in the world we live in today, is if we focus on the positive and the efforts matter and we all kind of have shared values of wanting a clean, beautiful place to live, like it's a unifying effort, right? If we're not talking about politics and we're not talking about legislation and rules and this, that, and the other, like go to one of our cleanups. You'll meet people of all walks of life, of all businesses, of all demographics. I mean, it's awesome to see. And they're all working towards the same goal and they're all doing something together. And what you said earlier is they're all feeling this gratification and satisfaction of doing this together, right? So I think there's a place for us to lean more into that in our society today and how we are really kind of an engaging community advocate-like organization for kindness and peace and collaboration. I mean, it's amazing to watch one of these things. If you haven't been to one, those of you listening out there, go and experience it for yourself, and I think you'll see what I mean.
Yeah, that's the opportunity. I was, like I say, I live in PB, and I think it was last weekend, I'm going for a walk on the boardwalk, and we hear all this decisiveness and everybody struggling against each other, but you go to the beach on a Saturday in the summertime or like on the 4th or something, and it's like there's so many people, every flavor, every color, every language, all having a great time because we got some common thing enjoying something together here. So you're actually creating that opportunity for people to have that. So tell me a great story, some heartfelt story where you're just like, Man, this is why I show up every day to go to work.
Gosh, it's, well, one of the things we haven't really talked about is our staff, like watching our staff develop. Because a lot of our staff come, it may be their first full-time job. Mm-hmm. Like it might be right out of high school or college. And so they're learning the workforce. And so we get to develop them, which is awesome. Maybe they're with us a couple of years. Maybe they stay longer if there's opportunities to grow.
So kind of a starting point for folks.
Yeah, yeah. I hear stories all the time from either former staff members or what's really impactful is I'll meet adults who say to me, Steve, you know what? They find out where I work and they say, oh, I Love a Clean San Diego. You know, I remember when I was in third grade and I Love a Clean San Diego came and did a presentation in my classroom. And back then, maybe they talked about plastic milk bottle recycling or something like that, or newspaper recycling. That was big early on. And they're like, I still remember that to this day. And that is so meaningful to hear. And there's a few of those kind of specific stories. There's certainly people who have worked for us who have gone on to great careers for not only other organizations, but like the county. There's a lot of people working at the county who used to work with us because they understand the effort it takes to mobilize people to clean up and to keep people safe. I mean, the county is really focused on keeping our water safe, keeping our air safe. And so we've had some great folks that I've seen go on, and they still tell the stories of when they worked at I Love a Clean San Diego, and they learned this, that, and the other that led them to pursue this career. I hear it all the time that when people say, like, well, is what you're doing really matters? Like, when somebody tells me they remember something from third grade and it had an impact on their life, I mean, that tells me that it's a powerful message and that we're doing something that's impactful in the community.
I love that. So I saw on, I think it was your LinkedIn, that you had your strengths listed there. So obviously, StrengthFinders is something that's near and dear to you. It's very near and dear to me. Tell me about that. Is that something you use in the organization with your team, or is that something that you're just using, or how does the StrengthFinders help you as a leader?
It is. I love leadership development. It is a passion of mine, and I've done all the assessments from...
I'm an addict to the assessments.
Yeah, to Myers-Briggs, to Enneagram. I mean, I've done them all.
What Enneagram number are you?
Well, guess.
I don't know. 7. 3.
7 is admirable. I love 7. 9 to me would be the greatest because that's like the kind of unifier of all. But unfortunately for most people who work with me, I'm an 8.
Right.
You know what an Enneagram 8
is? I am an 8.
Are you? it's a challenger. You tell me something and I'm going to say, okay, but then I'm going to want to ask you more questions. I'm going to want to poke holes in it. I want to really understand.
I always think everybody wants to be an 8. That's always my
opinion. Gosh, I see. I feel bad for my spouse and, those, because yeah. I'm always kind of
we're not easy.
Pushing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But back to your question about strengths. So yes, we use it in our organization. Everybody who works with us gets to take a StrengthsFinder assessment. I think it's a great skill or a tool to see what your skills are, kind of innately. I learned a while back from a mentor of mine in leadership, a lot of times you spend so much time focusing on your weaknesses. And in your performance review, I was like, well, where can you improve? I heard it said many times that I really believe it's like, well, why don't you just look at your strengths and then do more with your strengths? I mean, build on those. And I think that's what Clifton StrengthsFinder does.
That's the whole concept.
That's the whole concept, right? Yeah. So we use that not only for an understanding for each teammate to look around the room and say, okay, I see where you're really strong. I'm going to lean into you for that. But then for your own confidence, because I preach that. I say, okay, these are your strengths. Let's lean into those. Yes, there's some areas you can improve. But if you're really good at this, let's do more of that. And I think with mine, maybe I should update it because I probably put it on there during COVID when I was looking for a new job. I was... to pull back the curtain even more. So I was working at the YMCA about 8.5 years, and then COVID hit and everything shut down. We were all kind of furloughed waiting around for something to happen. And after a few months, how long can I wait? So I started looking for a job. I didn't think I'd ever leave the Y. So I was like, okay, well, how can I make myself more interesting in a digital space? I'm going to put my top 5 strengths. Plus, I think they really fit the types of jobs I was looking for. I was in fundraising or executive leadership. So my number one, which I'm really proud of, communication, because that in any job really, but obviously at leadership levels,
as a core tool,
communication's key, across the board. Now, in my role now, it's not only internally with the team, but it's externally with all of our partners, with our board, with the community, with the media, like yourself, Jeff, whether you just think you're in the media or not, you are.
It's a podcaster.
Yeah. But the funniest strength is number 2, because it's the funniest one to say. It's woo.
Yeah.
Like, what is woo? And people always snicker when they hear it, right? But woo is kind of what maybe your first impression is. It's like, it's wooing people. It's bringing people in. It's drawing them in. It's engaging them. And it's, it's not doing that in a self-serving kind of way. It's doing that in a unifying way. Like, hey, come on in. Let's talk. And that's what I love about my job and what we offer the community is it's a unifying effort. Let's clean up together. Let's make this better. All people are welcome. And that's, I feel like, one of my strengths. So it's hand in hand.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, you can go in and take the quick 5, whatever, for a pretty cheap price. And I think that gives you a little something in direction. I highly recommend all 34 because you really kind of want to look at those top 10, even 15. It's also looking at the bottom 34 going, yeah. I probably should stay away from these over here. So this is how anal I am. I actually write my top 10 down every day on my planner.
That's great.
Because they just line up with who I am. And it just kind of acts as a little reminder, like, Jeff, I can do this work. So kind of my core purpose is mobilizing possibilities. And I look at my strengths like, yep, that one fits there, that fits there, that fits there, that fits there. So, yeah.
Well, and of the strengths, there's four categories, right?
Which is also very helpful.
Which is interesting because if you look at mine.
You're an influencer?
Influencer. I have all the influencing in my top 10.
Me too.
It's overwhelmingly.
Me too. 8 out of 10 are pretty influencing.
Towards that, which again.
No, executing a little. Yeah. That's a different story for me.
It's good and bad. But what's great for me as a leader is I know what I need to hire for. Because if it's not in my wheelhouse, I need my chief operating officer, my director of finance, my communications person to be strong in some of these other areas, which lucky for me, when we've done our kind of core strengths analysis with our leadership team, we have a really good balance.
Yeah. Well, that's the key. Get everybody together, see how they blend together and put people in the right roles. Again, back to they can lean into things that, like, this excites me. I come to work, I get to do this. I'm energized at the end of the day versus what a grind this has been. So if you got to do that all week long, you're not going to last long. So yeah. Powerful, powerful tool. How do you guys fund your program? Where does that come from?
Yeah, it's a mix. So obviously I mentioned some government partners, you know, the county, the city. San Diego has a large group of cities and municipalities. So we partner with everyone from the city of La Mesa, the city of Carlsbad, Encinitas, the airport authority. They have sustainability goals. I mentioned, the 22nd Agricultural District, if you're not familiar with that is. If you've been to the Del Mar Fairgrounds, that's the state agency that runs that property. So they have sustainability goals. If you've seen where that lands, it's right on the San Diego watershed right there. So they obviously want to keep the environmental portions of their land clean. A lot of agencies that have sustainability goals, so county, city.
So locally focused, though, not federal.
No, we don't really have any.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Lucky for the current times we're in. Maybe there's some federal or state pass-throughs, money that comes to the county that might be funding some of our programs, but not directly. Because we're I Love a Clean San Diego, like we focus on the county limits from the border to Camp Pendleton, out into the desert even. But then we also have, you know, you mentioned corporate partners. We have a lot of corporate sponsors. We have some individual donors and then foundations. There's a lot of private foundations in town, some small, some big. Some are extremely environmentally focused. Some that's one of their pillars, maybe not their core. But we love the diversity of funders because it's we're not just tied to one contract. Like a law changes and we're in trouble, which I know a lot of my colleagues that work at some nonprofits have gone through in the last year. I feel blessed that we have the diversity of funding that we do. And it goes back to my core message here is that everybody wants a clean San Diego. Everybody wants a clean environment. So of course we're going to get funding from all these sources because businesses, municipalities, individuals, foundations, they all want this.
Yeah, love that. So you're obviously out and about, seeing lots of aspects of San Diego, and as a leader, what are you optimistic about?
Well, it's the sentiment that people care. I mean, people wouldn't show up for 3 hours on a Saturday to clean up if they did not care about the environment. They just wouldn't, right? And I'm seeing it every day. I mean, when we do the numbers annually, we're engaging anywhere from 80,000 to 100,000 people a year at some kind of event, whether it's a volunteer event or an education event or one of the clothing swaps that I mentioned or one of those types of activities. So obviously, people only show up to things that they care about, and that makes a big difference. And then I think awareness, like I think when I Love a Clean San Diego started, like I mentioned earlier, people weren't really aware that litter was an issue because litter wasn't really that prominent. It was starting to grow. I think today everybody's aware. Everybody understands.
Right.
They're throwing stuff away. They hear the reports about plastic, the great Pacific garbage patch floating around in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Everybody knows this is coming to a head. We're just somewhere in the middle of that right now. And if you look at vehicles, for instance, 30 years ago, you couldn't imagine electric vehicles driving around like they are now. And whether you like electric vehicles or not, it is a step in the right direction for energy and emissions reduction, right? We're not really in that business, but I think that's a good example of, like, eventually economies of scale and things will push us in that direction. It's just going to take time. I don't expect to see it shift in my lifetime to where we don't have litter issue anymore. But I think we're just part of the story. Does it really matter when somebody picks up one thing off the ground? And I would make a strong case that it does. You don't know where that piece of litter is going to end up. You don't know if it's going to get ingested. You don't know if it's going to break down and end up in our food supply. And so, you know, when you're out there and you see some litter and you go, is it even worth it to pick it up? I would argue yes. I would argue you don't know the impact of that one piece. And if everybody does a little bit here and there, you've heard that, it can make a movement. And I think I'm optimistic that San Diego has the mind to do that.
I think back to your point you made earlier about how everything ultimately ends up in the ocean. So when you go to the beach, unfortunately, we've got some issues with our beach down in the south here, but which is a whole other story. But it's the idea of, you don't want to go to the beach and like my mom. Okay, too many dead fish here on the beach. You can't go in today. Even if you're like an El Cajon, you're picking up some trash. Guess what? You're saving the beaches. So that's right. A wonderful
thing. You don't know where it's going to end up.
So what do you see from like the different generations? Do you see the younger generation really taking a bigger step towards this, or maybe nothing at all?
There's differences. Let's see, who do we have left? We got the baby boomers who, like I said, grew up kind of resource scarce. So I think they're doing their part. You know, my generation, Gen X, we're kind of stuck in the middle because we grew up without it. But then I think I had my first cell phone in college. So we started this kind of heavy consumption, single use in kind of the middle of our lives. So we're kind of stuck in the middle. We can appreciate what it was like in the past. And we're battling now our kids because our kids, the millennials and the Gen X and Z and Y, like they're all like inundated with stuff. However, I've heard studies that the kind of newest generation, which I guess would be Gen Z, that's kind of coming into adulthood now, they actually can see the problems that are being caused by all this because it's in front of them so much. It's not so new and shiny like it was for the millennials. So I do see a lot of optimism that there's surprisingly a lot of kind of sustainability, conservationist type movements with that generation. And, you know, like in any point in history, there's going to be a mix of opinions and beliefs. But again, I'm really focused on San Diego. So speaking locally here, I see there's not a big generational gap. I think everybody can come together and look outside and agree that they don't want trash and can kind of work towards removal of that.
Yeah. We have hope in our youth.
Always in the youth.
Us old guys haven't done a great job with the earth, so hopefully they're going to do something here for us. Well, it's actually time to put a bow on this, if you can believe it.
I could talk about this all day.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
I always like to end with, what's the one big idea? Like, if people didn't remember anything else from this podcast, what's the one thing you want them to remember?
I think that they can do something that matters for the environment. I think when you read the issues of, like you mentioned, like the toxic sewage coming across the border, or these big issues, you're like, well, what can I do?
Seems overwhelming.
Yeah, what does it matter? But again, every individual life is important. Every living thing matters. So I think doing a little bit does make a difference. If anything, you inspire somebody else, right? I know when I'm driving around and there's people in my neighborhood, there's these like community warriors that just go pick up litter on their own. You probably have them in your neighborhood. You're that in PB. So you see those people and like it. One makes me feel guilty because it's my job and I'm like, I should be out helping that person. But I'm also inspired. I'm inspired that people are doing this without being asked or without being part of some big event that we're putting on. The one big takeaway is do something. It matters. There's little things you can do every day to help the environment and take a chance.
We have lots of choices. We have choices in what we buy. We have choices in how we want to get rid of it. So those are all right there for us. So every day you get to make many, many choices around this whole subject matter. So that is awesome. Well, got to call the show here, Steve. Appreciate you coming in today. I appreciate what you're doing. This is like really super important work. We all want to live in a nice, lovely San Diego, and we all love San Diego, right? Let's keep it clean together. It's a community project. Thanks for taking the lead on that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff.
Well, that is our show for the day. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanta from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, where we're all counting on you.